Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harford. Jumpin' James Sniffling Herbert?
Yeah, kind of Sniffling James Herbert today.
Sniffling James Herbert.
It'll be okay.
You're a little under the weather.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't know if it's your flu game. Why don't we ever have a cold game?
Not even like cold-like symptoms.
Yeah, cold-like symptoms. I find I've had the cold much more in my life than I've had the flu.
Me too.
Well, I guess you don't call it the cold. I've had a cold in my life.
You could call it the cold.
We should start calling it the cold.
That makes it sound way worse than it actually is. I've got the cold.
Also,
I've got the plague.
It's hard to like pass off your symptoms as flu-like or as cold-like when it's just like a hangover. Because that's much more flu-like.
Yeah, hangover is... Yeah. So if you were to have, say, a flu game...
Right.
Then it could theoretically maybe I don't know. I can't prove this, but it might really be a hangover game.
It might
potentially
be.
If someone were to have had a flu game.
Some people have flu games and some people have hangover games.
Correct.
And it's just that's something that happens. So
every once in a while.
Yeah, every once in a while. At this point you just before every playoff game, I would say I have the flu. Or
fair.
SARS or something. I don't know. I'd say I have
SARS.
Yeah, I'd have something. Why not? Why not lie about it? It's all about entertainment anyway. Just build up your legacy.
Expectations.
Yeah. People will think you have incredible character but a horrible immune system.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's a good plan.
Yeah, that's so.
So that's what I've done with this podcast. Like, if I'm making no sense.
Right.
Then it's okay.
Yeah, because we have all those episodes of you making all the sense to compare to. Yeah, so no, I agree with that. This is the Ion Flu podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know where we want to start. I guess we could start with the Cleveland Cavaliers have ended the Chicago Bulls. Not just their season, but completely.
They've ended them.
I was thinking of this today when I was driving to get a haircut. That had nothing to do with why I was thinking about this. I just realized, like, oh, I was in my car. Why was I in my car? Oh, yeah, I was getting a haircut. Not in my car, but driving to get a haircut. I have a flu podcast in me right now. I was thinking about this. I was like, okay, I have to clarify that I'm not comparing Michael Jordan to LeBron James because that is not what I'm doing. But I thought, like, I wonder if any point in the 80s and 90s, late 80s, early 90s, if a Bulls fan was like, I wonder what it's like to be a Cavs fan and just have Michael Jordan just torture you postseason after postseason after postseason. And now, like, they kind of get a similar dose of that in that LeBron James just tortures them postseason after postseason after postseason. They can't beat him.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And it's weird because, like, this – I mean, I guess it wasn't – like, they're going to have nightmares about, like, Matthew Dellavedova. I guess he's, like, the Steve Kerr –
yeah,
or John Paxson now to name other white guys.
Sure, he's definitely not like a B.J. Armstrong or a Craig Hodges. Yeah, no.
but yeah, like this was, I mean, this was an interesting LeBron series, right? Like he had that incredible Game 5, and he had that game winner in Game 4, and then you know he was good last night again. Like he was very good, but he's. Generally, like, Butler did really well in terms of guarding him throughout this series, and it was sort of the Cavs' role players who ended up haunting Chicago, which was definitely not what people expected coming into this series, looking at the relative depth of these two teams, I would say.
Here are some numbers. All right, so LeBron averaged 4.5 turnovers. Oh, overall, he averaged 26 points, 11 rebounds, 8.8 assists. That's absurd.
Those are great numbers.
Yeah, those are incredible numbers. But 4.5 turnovers, he shot just under 40%, 39.9%. He shot 10% from three.
That's ridiculous.
10.7% from three-point range. Like, he was good, but he wasn't efficient. And that's the thing. Yeah. He's always been great and efficient, and he wasn't. And it was on the role players to pick him up, which is new. Like, it's new with this Cleveland team because all season long it's been, oh, can you know, is he going to have enough help? Do they have enough? Is it Can guys step up? Is JR going to step up? Do they have a backup point guard? Do they, whatever. Kyrie goes down, and Dellavedova was awesome. And Shumpert and JR Smith were huge. And Tristan Thompson was incredible.
Right.
And
Mozgov, for a lot of the series, was amazing.
Yeah, and even though, like, he had the game winner and he had that incredible game five, I think this is better for them because it shows at least that team that we have the resolve to get through these injuries and – look, you guys can help LeBron. Look at how you did that in Game 6. Like, you helped LeBron. He didn't have a good game, but they helped him. And maybe that's more important than just LeBron being a world beater and doing everything by himself.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally true. And like, LeBron has had this thing throughout big games in the season and big games in the playoffs where after all of them, he says, I think we grew as a team tonight. We're growing every game. And sometimes you can kind of roll your eyes and be like, Yeah, this is just what LeBron says, but I think they legitimately grew during this series. I think this was just the way they did it was about as much as they could hope for, considering, at times during the series, it was like, okay, so Kyrie is hobbling. J.R. Smith missed the first couple of games, and the Kevin Love thing had everybody freaking out coming into it, and there were people saying, like, oh, this is just like those old Cavs teams from before he went to Miami. It's just LeBron carrying everyone, and that's just not what it was. Like, we saw a bunch of different guys, almost everybody who stepped foot on the floor for the Cavs contributed in some way, and a lot of them had huge games. I think Tristan Thompson's probably the biggest story of any of the reserves, sure. But I thought Shumpert was awesome. I thought Mozgov, for the most part, was really good. The defense just is nowhere near as good as it is without Mozgov, and I think this is something they can build on because going into the Eastern Conference Finals, and definitely if they're able to win that, if they go into the finals, regardless of which West team is there, like, they're going to need it to not be a one-man show, because against really good teams that, like, LeBron is great, and I guess we saw what he did in Game 5 where he was, like, peak LeBron, but I don't think you're going to get all the way or where they want to go if they don't continue to get this kind of effort from the role players.
Yeah, I agree, and here's some other incredible stats. So with J.R. Smith on the floor, they had the highest net rating of plus 14.3. Iman Shumpert, second highest, plus 13. Tristan Thompson, plus 12.5. Matthew Dellavedova, plus 10.3 per 100 possessions. It's not until like fifth on that list that you get to LeBron. And they had these, and not just like they were that good. With those guys on the floor, off the floor, Shumpert, without Shumpert on the floor, they were a minus 11. So you're looking at a 24-point difference per 100 possessions with Shumpert on the floor. Tristan Thompson, they were a minus 11.4. So you're looking at, what is it, 20 another 24-point difference.
I mean, they're really counting on these guys.
Yeah, they're really, like, they really needed those role players because they made the biggest difference. You got to think, like, they're going to have that against Atlanta, assuming Atlanta moves on.
Yeah.
You have to
even
have
even if
that.
It's Washington.
Yeah, even if it's Washington. I mean, if
Washington's defense is too good for them to just rely on one guy, if it ends up being them.
Yeah, and it's something where, I don't know, maybe they do have enough to challenge the West. If those role players are capable of playing like that, it makes things a lot easier. Now, we got to know what happens with Kyrie.
Right.
That's a huge story. Yeah, but that's also huge that, like, he could have gone back in last night, allegedly. He didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't need him to because the role players played so well.
Yeah.
That's it. That's a big boost for them.
No, that was ideal. Getting him some extra rest. Now getting him some rest now. They're going to be rooting for a Game 7 in Wizards Hawks. And I thought that was just phenomenal for Dellavedova's confidence. Because, I mean, I think we've liked him as kind of a role player, as a backup. But I don't think I ever expected him to play that kind of role in a playoff game, in a deciding game like that. I think that was just a huge moment for him. And that guy's confidence, not that he ever really lacks for confidence, but I think especially now it's sky high. And you can say that for that whole bench and all the role players on that team. I guess, like, Tristan Thompson isn't a bench player anymore, but you know what I mean? Like, I just think everybody on that team believes that they have what it takes now, when earlier in the season, this was a team that LeBron described as fragile.
Yeah, well, look at all the injuries. They are fragile, James.
I meant mentally.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. so I guess we feel good about the Cavs. Yep. How do we feel about this Bulls team? Because it looks like it's the end of the Thibodeau era.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
Like, at this point, it would be a stunning surprise if he ended up coaching another game for this team.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, like, what do we view it as? Like, was it a success?
It wasn't. It wasn't a success.
It wasn't a failure. Right, yeah.
I think this team had championship aspirations, and they obviously fell short, and injuries were a big part of that just all season long. I think the big thing is, like, Joakim Noah was, like, a legit, like, top five MVP candidate last season.
Right.
And he was almost unplayable for parts of the playoffs. So just taking that into consideration, like, it's just, like, if you took a player of that caliber off of any team, mind you, I guess the Cavs are dealing with that with Love, too. But this Bulls team was capable of more. I think it's kind of sad that the Thibodeau era is ending, but I don't think, like, when you look toward next season, if they bring back essentially the same team and they have a different coach, but they're just healthier, then I think this is still an elite Eastern Conference team.
Yeah, I think this team was still good enough to make the finals.
Yeah.
Just because they didn't, I don't think that's a necessarily a knock on that. I mean, their bench was just bad.
Yeah.
In this entire series, their bench was just so bad, and that kind of failed them. And I don't know if that's Thibodeau's fault. I don't know if that's management's fault. I don't know if that's just the players' fault. Like, I don't know what, you know, where the blame goes on that. But I guess my question is, like, why do we assume, or do we assume, like, a new coach means they'll be healthier?
We don't. A new coach could mean a better offense, right?
Yeah. I mean, their offense was good this year. I think it was top 10, but it was not consistent.
It was not consistent, and you just sort of got the feeling like it could be better.
Yeah.
Like, you just felt like, at least I did, like, with the parts that they had, they could have just had a more efficient offense. They have a lot of weapons, but it seemed like certain guys were kind of prioritized over others. I think we could see with a different coach, if they run a slightly different system, they could be a better offensive team. And defensively, you know, this team overachieved year after year. And then this year, like, you know, they're a good defensive team, but I think even there, like, they were kind of inconsistent in weird ways this season.
Yeah. Especially at the end of the season.
Yeah. So I think if you're a Bulls fan, like, you're bummed out. But I would say, like, you got to see Derrick Rose hit a game winner at the United Center. Like, that was a pretty cool moment. Like, the fact that he was good in the postseason is pretty exciting. And if he can play somewhere approaching 82 games next year, knock on wood, like, that would be a huge success for this team. And they have some good young players. I think Mirotić, despite the horrible last couple of games in this series, had an excellent season. I think just if Gibson and Noah are healthier next year, like, that is an incredible front court. Maybe they end up moving one of those guys. I don't know. But yeah, like, I think Snell showed improvement. I think McDermott should probably be able to actually contribute next season. I don't feel bad about the Bulls going forward. I'm just kind of interested in what they're going to do on the coaching front, because if you have a Adrian Griffin coach team, I don't really know what that looks like, and I don't really know what a Fred Hoiberg coach team looks like at the NBA level either.
Yeah.
And who knows who else they're considering.
Based on their playing careers, I would assume that a Fred Hoiberg based team is a lot of 3-point shooting, and then an Adrian Griffin based team is a very defensive minded unit.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's what I would assume. That's my expert analysis on that. It is interesting to think, like, all right, so who are the candidates out there? It's you know, you have Hoiberg, you have Adrian Griffin being moved up, you have I don't know, Alvin Gentry could be an option.
Do you think they'd go with somebody like a Mike Malone when they've just had a Thibodeau? Like,
I think so, because I think it's still the principles that you liked in Thibodeau without the demand on players.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, it's not like the players were complaining about this. They were all in, or at least publicly, they were all in on it, right? It was like,
publicly, yeah. Publicly, yes. Yeah. I think maybe if you gave some of them truth serum, they would say, I didn't like being forced to play that many minutes or this many minutes when I just came back from injury or whatever. But I don't know that for a fact. I find it hard to believe anything anybody in that organization is saying publicly right now.
That's a fair assessment. They don't have a great track record.
I believe that, you know, when Rose says, if it was up to me, he'd be back. I believe that totally.
Yeah.
Because I think Thibodeau has supported him.
I just want to poke Derek on the shoulder and be like, hey, by the way, it can be up to you. You're the star of the team.
At this point, though, I don't know. I think it might be beyond repair.
I don't know. I think that he still has some clout in the organization. It is Reinsdorf, after all, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess. I think you feel good about them moving forward. Their core is intact. They have Rose, Noah, Gibson, Gasol, Mirotić, McDermott, and Snell all definitely under contract next year. Dunleavy is a free agent. That could be tricky because they're not huge on the tax historically.
Yeah. No.
And they're going to have to really pay Jimmy Butler, who's, you assume that they're going
to
match his contract, which will be high. I would think that Kirk Heinrich would exercise his player option and make $2.8 million next year.
If I were Kirk Heinrich, I would certainly do that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think for the most part...
Maybe they stretch him. Like, who knows?
Yeah, they could. I mean, it's, you know, that one Kirk Heinrich fan is going to be really bummed if they do that, but...
Tom Thibodeau?
Is that who's been tweeting me?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're intact. Like, this is their team. And moving forward, like maybe it's a Steve Kerr situation where you just bring in a new coach and he's got better ideas and he gets it done. I mean, you know, Thibodeau was 255 and 139 as a regular season head coach. It's a 64.7 win percentage. That's really good.
Especially when you consider all of the adversity that those teams went through.
Yeah, all the injuries, all that stuff. Like that's really good. He was 23 and 28 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's not so good. But it's also really hard to win championships. And you look
it's
at
incredibly
like,
hard, and his team's been banged up in every playoff.
Yeah, and two of those postseasons, he didn't have his guys. Everybody was injured, so it's like, you know, what can he do in that situation? What can you do? Like, I think you throw those out, but still, you know, if you throw those out, he's a 500 coach in the postseason. That's good. It's not great. It's not so good that you have to say, you know, oh, this guy definitely has to be back.
Yeah, I think it's so weird evaluating him because it's like he is one of the best coaches in the league in terms of what he's done since he showed up there.
Yeah.
And he completely turned the organization around. And I think the players really respected his work ethic and really just played so hard for him. And he was able to get the most out of guys who have struggled elsewhere. He was able to he was just able to overachieve a lot. This year, he didn't. And it's weird because I think we're in this position where we want to praise him for all of that stuff while also acknowledging, well, not the biggest fan of how he runs guys into the ground. And I'm not the biggest fan of his offensive principles. But that doesn't mean that I think he deserves to be fired necessarily. It doesn't mean I wouldn't be... Like, I wouldn't tell a fan base to be excited if their team ended up hiring him. It's just, it's kind of complicated because he has very, very obvious strengths and very, very obvious weaknesses. And you just kind of have to look at that on balance and say, like, should this guy stay or should this guy, does he fit somewhere else? And it just kind of depends. And it just seems like at this point with the Bulls, it's reached a point where, you know, there will be some people upset if and when he goes, but the writing has been on the wall for so long that we're just looking at it like, okay, we'll see what the next guy can do.
Yeah, and I also think that maybe when he does get fired or let go or whatever, maybe this becomes a learning experience and he adjusts. Like, great coaches end up adjusting, you know, to their situations.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's possible. Maybe that's he looks at it in the next place. He's like, all right, I'm not going to run these guys into the ground. I think it's funny. Like, we're like, oh, they underachieved this year. They went 15-32, and maybe part of this is his fault. But Jimmy Butler missed 17 games. Joakim Noah missed 15 games. Mike Dunleavy missed 19 games. Taj Gibson missed 20 games.
Yeah.
Derrick Rose missed 31 games.
Yeah, they were almost never whole.
Yeah, I mean, 50 wins, sure, it's the East, but 50 wins with all those injuries and all those missed games, that's still pretty impressive. It doesn't mean they shouldn't have been better, and it doesn't mean, like, maybe he's not the reason that they miss so many games, but I also think that we overblow that a little bit, too.
Yeah. No, it was a weird season, and I think they did fine.
Yeah, like, I don't think we believe that they maximized their ability, but I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
They get
you have championship expectations, it's like a pretty good job. It's like,
that's
all right,
the thing, well. Yeah. They get a silver star, but you need a gold star.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see what happens there, because honestly, like, if you just look on paper, like, that team is as good as anybody in the East, and I think, like, a lot of people picked them to win the title at the beginning of the year, and that wasn't crazy. Especially considering that their road should have theoretically been easier than teams in the West.
Yeah. All right. I think we need to. I guess we need to talk about the Rockets Clippers.
What was that?
Well, here's the thing. The Clippers didn't learn their lesson from the Rockets in this series. They had a 19-point lead with 2:15 left in the fourth quarter. And they started fouling.
They had a 97% chance of winning the game.
Yeah, 2 minutes left in the third quarter, 19-point lead. They start fouling Dwight Howard. And, you know, they just kind of... I don't even really know what they're... like, you start losing your rhythm when you start fouling these guys. And granted, one was on a putback or offensive rebound, and then they just fouled him out of nowhere, I think, with like a minute left. And all of a sudden, like, they just started chipping away at the lead, and 40-15 in the fourth quarter later, Josh Smith, I mean, Chris Paul hits a one-legged step-back three-pointer at the buzzer, and that's the only reason they outscored Josh Smith in the fourth quarter. Without that shot,
Nobody else in the Clippers scored in the last, like, half of that quarter.
Yeah, Josh Smith had 14 points, they had 12 points until that last shot. And, I mean, what do you chalk it up to? Like, some of it's defense, but they were also just missing a lot of shots. I don't know what to make of it.
I think they just totally relaxed. I think they just assumed they were going to the next round. I think a lot of the series has been relatively easy for them. Not that they haven't been working hard, but just...
No, it has been
Rockets,
easy.
The Rockets have not... shown up for
a couple
of different games.
When DeAndre Jordan's on the court, they blow this team out of the water in the series.
Yeah, and I think human nature took over, and then they kind of let the Rockets back a little bit, and once they started really feeling the pressure and needing to make a shot to just stop the bleeding, like, the shots were just rimming out. And the next thing you knew, the Rockets had the lead. It was crazy. I think it's funny that we were talking the last time, or maybe two podcasts ago, about how Josh Smith and Corey Brewer were shooting like 14% or something in the series, and these were guys that were big in the first round and kind of changed the Rockets' season when they were picked up. And these are the two guys, like, Harden's on the bench sniffling like me, and Corey Brewer and Josh Smith just can't miss.
Corey Brewer.
Smith is making, like, step-back threes.
Yeah.
Which, whatever. But it was incredible.
Corey Brewer was plus 32 last night.
he what did we said he was a high variance player.
Yeah, that's some variance. That's some variance that was high. it's just none of this seems to make sense. Like, Josh Smith was 4-7 from three. J.J. Redick was 3-9.
Sure.
Josh Smith hits a big three, I think, to put them up 8 or 9 points in the fourth quarter. J.J. Redick comes down next possession, misses an open three. Yeah. Like, it's just, like, nothing made sense. And credit the Rockets. They didn't give up. I think a lot of teams on the road, game six, down double digits in the fourth quarter, I think a lot of those teams give up. And especially this Rockets team, which has looked so disinterested to play good basketball in this series. They just said, no, screw this. We're going to force a game seven. And they did.
It doesn't make sense. It was like we were so disappointed in this team earlier in the series. Like, how did they blow that game when Chris Paul wasn't even playing? Like, why are they just folding in the third quarter, like, on multiple occasions? And now, when it actually seemed like, you know, most teams would fold, it's like, oh, there's that fight. It's coming in the fourth quarter when you're about to be eliminated, but sure, like, it they got it when they absolutely needed it. And their defense stepped up, and their defense has been conspicuously absent for a lot of the playoffs, aside from the last game. And, yeah, they got lucky, but they also played really, really hard, and they rallied, and they pulled it off. And I think it's not going to be an easy win at all for the Clippers in Game 7. I think they put themselves in a really tough spot, and they really needed to avoid this. 'Cause if Harden is a bit better the next game, like, this is, I think this is going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah. So here's a stat I came up with for the what to watch yesterday. The stat was 42% shooting. When the Clippers had only done it, had only had 10 games, including the playoffs, in which they shot worse than 42%. And they were 3-7 in those games. The Rockets, when they held their opponent under 42%, were 26-1.
That is a stat.
The one loss was to the Lakers in November. So 26-1. Hold them to 41.8% from the field last night.
Ooh, just under.
Just under. I mean, that's the number in this series. And so can they do that again? Can they stop the Clippers from making shots? Because we know that they, you know, this Clippers team is a great offense, but when the offense isn't efficient, do they know how to grind those games out? I don't think, the last two games they haven't.
The last two games they definitely haven't. And I think when your offense is that good and when that's kind of your identity, and it's not like they're a bad defensive team, but I just think they're an okay defensive team. And thus, when it's going really well offensively, I think you can kind of get in the habit of like, okay, this is how we win, right?
Yeah.
And that just wasn't enough yesterday. It was enough to take a huge lead, but when they had to get buckets at the end and they had to actually get stops, it was too late. And I'm just like at a loss in terms of explaining the Rockets now. Like, why are they engaged sometimes and not others?
Like, I just don't understand them. I flat out, like, I feel like I can get a handle on most teams in the NBA year in, year out, and the last 3 weeks, I'm just baffled by this Rockets team. And I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. I don't know what to make of them. And of course, this series that no one has had fun watching, despite all these points, is going to a seventh game. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense because they're down 3-1. It's hard to force that game 7.
When you're hoping this is the one game where we get, like,
oh, let's just have a really fun,
clean,
game
close game throughout.
When in reality, it's game 7. If anything, Dwight and DeAndre are both taking 30 free throws.
Oh, man. Please, no. Don't ruin a game 7.
It's already ruined.
You should petition the league to change the rule, like, tomorrow. Just get it done. Don't let this happen.
So Corey Brewer made 5 shots in the fourth quarter. The Clippers made 4.
Ridiculous.
I feel like that's a recipe for disaster.
that's not how Doc Rivers drew it up.
If you're the Rockets, that's a recipe for success.
That is some great A analysis right there.
So what do you feel like, what are your thoughts on going into game 7, like what they're gonna do?
How can anybody know? I, like, honestly, I don't think the Rockets are just going to lay down again. I think I would just shock me. I think based on, if you look at the balance of the season, right? Like, if you look at how they performed in the regular season, they were the team that kind of overcame everything and stuck together and would never give up regardless of who was in and out of the lineup. And I think the Clippers are the more talented team right now. I would say, so I still, like, would probably pick them to win, even though it's on the road, but I don't think it's going to be a situation where the Rockets just give up again like they did earlier in the series. I think they're kind of past that.
Yeah, that's a really good point about they've overcome adversity all year round. Like, through all the injuries, all that crap, they've overcome adversity, and I don't know why it surprises me that they overcame a 3-1 deficit, because
they created it for themselves this time.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, that is the difference. I guess they played so crappy and so disinterested that it's weird to see them kind of turn on. But, you know, backs against the wall, and they've pushed back. And I guess I expect them to win.
You expect the Rockets to win?
I guess I expect them to win in Game 7 because they're at home. I mean, I always just kind of default to the home team.
That's what the stats say.
Yeah, that's what the stats say. Although...
I hope Steve Ballmer makes the trip, though, because I like when they pan to him when, like, regardless of the situation, whether the Clippers are winning and he's, like, high-fiving, going crazy, or when he just has, like, his hands on his head, like, I can't believe what I'm watching. It's great.
I'm surprised he's not showing up in either a Clippers uniform, Clippers warm-ups, or a referee uniform, and just sitting courtside. Like, I feel like...
referee uniform, I like that.
Yeah, I feel like he would really get into that and just, like, start dressing up.
I would dig it.
Yeah, or maybe he goes, like, full Jimmy Goldstein.
No, I don't want to... That'd be weird.
Well, yeah, nobody wants to see it. I'm not saying we want to see this. I'm just saying, I mean, it's an eccentric guy. Yeah, I guess I expect...
I wonder if he knows Jimmy Goldstein. Like, I wonder if those two talk, because Goldstein kind of knows everybody, right?
Yeah, I feel like we know Jimmy Goldstein. We don't even know it yet.
Oh, wow, that's scary.
Yeah, well, or it's also exciting.
True.
I'm trying to, like, make heads and tails of what I think is going to happen in Game 7. I still think the Clippers are the better team.
Yeah, that's why I'm going with them. Yeah. But, I mean, how can anybody feel confident either way right now?
Yeah, no, I feel like the Clippers are the better team, but I feel like the Rockets are going to win.
Yeah. I hope we have, like, peak Griffin, peak Harden, and, like... Just, I would really love if it wasn't a free throw fest, but I'm not getting my hopes up.
We only had 79 of them in game 6.
Sure, only 79.
Only 79. Dwight was ridiculous.
Yeah.
20 and 21.
He's really turned his series around.
That battle between him and DeAndre Jordan, you know, ends up being the key matchup here.
Yeah.
It seems like whoever gets the better of that matchup ends up winning the game.
Yeah, that's how it's been for a lot of the series. And it's interesting because, like, you think of Howard as, like, you know, on a different level. But, I mean, Jordan's been... I mean, the free throws are one thing, whatever. That's a separate storyline. But just in terms of the defense that he's played in this series and the way he's functioned basically all year as a pick-and-roll man and a threat for those lobs, like, he's been great. And I think when we're talking about why Harden hasn't been that great for a lot of it, I mean, part of it is, I guess, he's been sick. But the other thing is when he gets in the lane, like, DeAndre is there. And he's not making many mistakes on that end. Like, he's kind of been that defensive player of the year that we thought he wasn't, if that makes sense.
Right. That's exactly what he's been. And you know what? Like, he only shot 6 free throws last night.
Yeah.
They went away from the strategy, and the Rockets were in a better rhythm. And I would say overall they were in a better rhythm. I know that it's that fluke, or I don't know fluke, but it's this out of nowhere, you know, fourth quarter that turns everything. So it's easy
right.
to say that in the entirety of, you know, in just looking at that moment. But it's still like I felt like they were playing better basketball for the most part, whether it was going well or not.
Yeah, and I think confidence is a huge part of that. Like, I think it's hard to start a rally and be like, yeah, we got this, we're coming back, and, like, remain in the flow if you're interrupting it every 3 seconds to foul a guy.
Right.
So I don't think that comeback happens if they're intentionally fouling the whole way through it.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, let's look at games tonight.
Let's do it.
The Atlanta Hawks are looking to close out the Washington Wizards. We know John Wall's playing, right?
He said he's playing. Okay. Whitman said, like, he thinks he'll go, but he's not sure. But then Wall came out and was like, yeah, I'm playing.
Okay, yeah. It went pretty well. I mean, it was a boost. They weren't better with him on the court, but I think they were kind of a better team overall because he was playing.
I thought he was great. I know his numbers weren't incredible or anything, but I thought his presence was huge for them.
Yeah, his presence was big. He was good defensively, I thought. He was pretty good offense. I mean, you know, missed jumpers.
I mean, Teague was shut down.
Yeah.
I realized, like, we found out afterward that he had said keep Schroeder in, but just that it got to that point where Teague was having a kind of off night and was content to let shooter play. Like, I don't think that was unrelated to Wall playing.
Yeah, no, I mean, Teague had 7 turnovers in 31 minutes. He, yeah. 14 points, 6 of 13 shooting, 5 assists, but yeah, just couldn't hold on to the ball, and the, I mean, the Hawks just made some stupid turnovers in that game.
Yeah.
Just really dumb decisions, and I didn't know if it was the Wizards' defense tricking them, or it was just, maybe they just thought the Wizards would just go away at some point. I mean, I don't know. I can't figure out their mentality.
Especially the start of that fourth.
Yeah.
It's totally out of sync.
Yeah, the second half was just awful. The start of that fourth was awful, but they pulled it out. They pulled out the victory. And, you know, we had the whole Paul Pierce thing, which I just... to me, it's like we go back, oh, he shouldn't have said series to that. Like, is he supposed to hit the shot, go, hey, Hawks bench, we got 8 seconds left. if we get the stop, stay right there. I'm gonna come back. I got something to say to you. Like, that was to me, and it's like, oh well, it's the risk he takes. It's like, yeah, but why? It's such a weird thing to be like, oh, he shouldn't have said that. Why? He hit the shot. You talk trash when you hit the shot.
I think it's just like with everything that's happened this postseason, he's been the guy who doesn't shut up. He's been the trash talker, whether it's on the court or in the press. He's been that guy, and that's not going to change. And it's just funny that, like, he's had the last laugh every single time except this time. So I think it's natural that people are going to laugh at him for that and say, you know, he made a fool of himself, whatever. He doesn't care. That's the thing about it is, like, he might get some people, like, saying some things on the internet about him. That is the last thing he is concerned about. Like, he is going to talk trash. He's going to talk trash all throughout the next game too. That's just who he is, and I doubt he regrets saying series. But at the same time, I think it's pretty funny that he said series.
Yeah. And by the way, Al Horford is officially a monster.
He's a superstar.
Is he?
I think so. I think there are few players who are that good on both ends, and he's not the traditional type of, okay, we're going to throw this guy the rock and he's going to get us a bucket. Like, we talked about that, but I mean, he did do that a couple of times in that last game, and he saved the game.
Yeah.
And it was game-changing plays, like some of the blocks that he had. Like, in the first quarter, he had, like, 3 monster blocks in what felt like 2 seconds. And then he had a big one on Wall right at the end of the fourth. And he willed his team to a victory. Like, that's the cliche superstar thing to do, isn't it?
It is. Well, yeah, that's true. It is. And he really did just, like, went and ripped that basketball.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, why did Dennis Schroeder is that the play they called, or did he just break it off? Like, I know he attacked early, so that's better. I think he did break it off. But he just goes, and it's like, what?
He didn't have an advantage on that play.
Yeah, I can't imagine that's the play call.
But Schroeder's a bit like Corey Brewer, right? Like, that whole fourth quarter, he was doing stuff that was really ambitious, and it was working for a while. And that was after he had this disastrous earlier stint in a game where everybody was wondering why he was still playing. But they're not in that position at the end for him to miss that wild shot and then Horford save the day if he doesn't hit some huge shots in this high-pressure situation in the fourth. Like, he is not scared of anything, even if he's making mistakes and doing crazy things and being unpredictable. Like, it's been a weird up and down, probably more down than up postseason for him, but he's wild, and it's kind of fun to see him watch and learn. Like, I expect him to learn a lot from this situation, but it's just it's odd.
Yeah, no, I don't think he was, like, I'm not saying he shouldn't have played. I just thought it was weird to be like, all right, Dennis, go win us the game. Like, that's...
Yeah, especially from the Hawks, of all teams.
Right, yeah, it's like this team, like, oh, team, you don't know who's going to get the shot. I guess no one knew that Dennis was going to get the shot, so that's true, but... but yeah, and then Horford just rips it away.
Yeah.
Looked like Paul Pierce was boxing on a ghost at one point.
Yeah, I'm
on the
not
play.
Sure where he was...
I don't know what Nene was doing. Like, Nene's got to just... He's got to throw his body into Horford and not let him go get that.
Well, he chose to box up Millsap, right? Wasn't that...
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be like Gortat helps. I think Nene's got to go get Gortat's man. It's got to be like a, and then Pierce drops down to Millsap and all that. You know, that's what's got to be the deal.
Right, but Pierce wasn't in the right place at all.
Yeah, I guess not.
I don't know. Maybe I have to rewatch it, but
yeah, no, that might be right. Now I'm getting confused.
I thought Pierce
confused.
And Nene had a bit of a miscommunication, and I'm not really sure who to blame on that. But I'm not. I don't know. There's also the possession before, like when Pierce got that three. That was like an uncharacteristic thing for the Atlanta Hawks to do. Like this kind of goes against their whole identity. Like,
oh, they
what happened?
Completely broke down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like for them, if they had lost the game like that. That just would have been so crushing and so not Atlanta basketball. And a lot of the playoffs has been Atlanta playing not Atlanta basketball. But again, like Horford managed to save it and we're left in this position again where we're like, okay, well, the Hawks won. And maybe if they keep winning, they're going to find that magic that they had earlier in the season. There's still technically time to, but it's just weird that we haven't seen a lot of signs of that happening.
Yeah, no, it's been... I don't know. Between them and the Rockets, I can't figure anything that's going out.
No.
It doesn't make any sense to me. The Wizards are 2.5-point favorites.
I can't really argue with that.
Yeah, the John Wall boost, being at home, it all makes sense to me. There's no way you expect the Hawks to close this out on the road because they've just been so inconsistent, right?
That's why I expect them to do it.
Okay. The old switcheroo.
The old switcheroo.
I don't know if that's a switcheroo, but it's something.
It's the whole, like, it wouldn't make any sense. Just like the Rockets win last night made no sense. So sure, the NBA is weird.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go with the Wizards. I think this one's going 7.
Yeah. That is the sensible thing to do. I'm being not so sensible.
No, but I think your reasoning's correct. The fact that this doesn't make any sense is why it will happen.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of been this Hawks postseason.
It's been a lot of the postseason.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess expect it. Everyone talks about how predictable the NBA is.
I can't say that now.
Good luck predicting this.
Yeah.
Who had the Rockets portion of Game 7 after the way they looked?
Who had that midway through the third quarter?
Right, and who thought that the Nets and a John Wallace Wizards team would give so many fits to the Hawks?
To the best team in the East in the regular season.
Yeah, so you got the Hawks, I got
team
the
team that beat
Wizards.
Golden State at home.
Yeah. It's bizarre. And then the other potential closeout game, Golden State Warriors in the Grindhouse against the Memphis Grizzlies. Warriors are 5-point favorites. After the last two games, I kind of expect the Warriors to close this out. I hope I'm not being dismissive of the Grizzlies.
I want the Grizzlies to win. Like, let me just.
I'd love a game 7.
I want a game 7. Yeah. I think this series has been great, despite the Warriors looking so superior the last couple of games. Like, I've really enjoyed this, and I really like watching Memphis play. So I want a game 7, but I find it hard to predict that.
Yeah, and this the Warriors just, hey, by the way, best defense in the league. They've shown that. Like, they reminded everybody, this is what they do. They crush your dreams on both ends of the floor. And they weren't even that good offensively.
There's this interesting team, right? Because they're kind of everybody's favorite team in the way that, like, say, like the 7 seconds or less Suns or like the early to mid 2000 Kings were, and like they're super fun and they're like up and down and they're really unselfish and they make these highlight plays, and when they're going, there's no more exciting team in the league. But like, they're not just the fun team, like they're the like the Goliath too. Like, they're terrifying, they're a juggernaut. Like, Grizzlies fans are just like, once they see some of those threes get going, it's like, oh my god, like they're those two teams, the super fun fan favorite team and the like overwhelming crushing monster, is not usually the same squad.
Yeah, I mean, when you the Grizzlies made 4 threes, Steph Curry made 6.
Yeah, math.
Yeah, it's just math. I don't know what you can expect to happen. I mean, the turnovers were. I mean, a lot of the game was pretty even.
The Grizzlies do need to make threes, though. Like,
oh, God,
Courtney
yeah.
Lee couldn't miss any threes at the start of the series, and now we can't even get a look.
Yeah, no, he was 1 of 1. He took 3 shots in 31 minutes. Like, he needs to take more shots. And
it's like, do you put that on Courtney Lee? Like, not really. That's just kind of a function of their offense.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, I think he needs to be more aggressive. Probably more moments where he could have gone after, you know, a bucket or something. But yeah, I also think that that's a product of the offensive system where they were very centered on, very centered on getting Marc Gasol the ball and trying to make sure that he did things. And, you know, Jeff Green wasn't very good, and Zebo was okay, but he wasn't good enough. And if they can't bully the Warriors, they can't really do anything.
Yeah, that's what's tough. Like, when the Grizzlies, at the start of the season, when they were, like, steamrolling everyone, when they beat the Warriors, I think they had 1 week where, I'm not sure, they beat the Warriors and, like, some other amazing team, like, almost back-to-back. Like, maybe it was, like, the Spurs or the Rockets or something. Like, I don't remember who it was. Maybe the Clippers. And it was just like, whoa, this Memphis team. And at that point, their offense was like an upper echelon offensive efficiency, and a lot of that was just Marc Gasol just beasting everyone.
I think I found it. They beat the Warriors on December 16th. Previous game, overtime win against the Sixers. Oh wait, no, it's the game after. They had an overtime win against the Spurs in San Antonio.
Okay.
The day after that Warriors win.
There you go.
It's one of those games. I can't remember which one you're talking about, but yeah, I think I know.
Definitely the Sixers. But yeah, like at that point, Gasol was just this like unstoppable force, and it's not that he's bad now because it's a playoffs. Like, no, like superstars don't suddenly just forget how to play, but like he's taking tough shots against this Warriors team, and it's just like, this is the best defense in the NBA, and Gasol isn't this just clear advantage when he's being guarded by a Bogut, or even when he's being guarded by like a Draymond Green, but there's help there and Green is like all up in his jersey.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, they rely so much on Gasol and Randolph making plays and then kicking it out to open shooters, but they're just, those guys are going to need to make some really difficult plays basically now, unless Conley can somehow shake free of Klay Thompson, which he's been unable to do the past couple of games.
We missed that Curry had a 5x5.
Wait.
18 points, 7 rebounds, 6 steals, 5 assists, 5 turnovers. That's a 5x5.
Oh, I was like, there's going to be a catch here. As soon as you said it, I was like,
yeah, turnovers. Yeah. No, I mean, there's just, I know Matt's apoplectic right now, but I don't know. I don't feel like, I mean, he's kind of painted it as like, oh, everybody wants the Warriors to win. I just think that everyone just recognizes the Warriors are a much better team. And they're fun, right?
I think they're just, yeah, they're just fun. And
it's not that people
don't
are,
like the Grizzlies.
Yeah, people aren't rooting against the Grizzlies. It's just like, I could root for the Timberwolves to make the playoffs next season, or I could recognize that they're better teams. Like, you know,
so you're comparing the Timberwolves to the Grizzlies.
The Grizzlies are the Timberwolves of the playoffs?
Oh, wow.
Is that... The play, that is, the, you know, you know what they are? They're the Timberwolves of this series.
Yeah, you know? If one of these teams in the series is the Timberwolves, it's definitely not the Warriors.
Right. That's what I mean as I try to dig out of this hole. No, it's just, you know, this Warrior. I mean, who doesn't want to watch Steph Curry?
That's my thing, is like, I just, there's no more fun team when they're rolling.
Yeah.
But I understand how, like, if you're rooting for the other team, regardless if it was the Pelicans in the first round or if it's the Grizzlies or whatever, like, it's just demoralizing when they get on those runs.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Warriors. It's their season so far.
Yeah, it's totally their season. And I think it's interesting because we've never really seen a team like this before. Because we've seen the teams that can score like them, but they haven't been able to play the defense that they played. And it seems like they have even more confidence to take those shots when, or like, because of their good defense, because it's like, well, it's, every shot is kind of a heat check because you just know that you're like, you're confident that the other end, you're going to be able to get a stop if you need it. At least that's the way, like, that kind of cockiness is something that I think they have on both ends, which sort of stems from Draymond and Bogut being crazy awesome on defense, but it just seems like a team-wide thing. Like, they just, after they got over the hump against this team, and you could kind of see when it happened, they just had that self-belief that, like, yeah, we're going to do whatever we want. The offense wasn't even that good in the last game. They just kind of made shots because that's what they do.
I don't get this idea that the Warriors are, like, running up the score. I've seen. It's like, well, look what just happened with the Clippers and Rockets last night. The Warriors are making you quit. That's their job. And if it's they're up 18 and they're still shooting threes, yeah. Well, one, that's their offense, and two,
they're not going to stop shooting threes,
though. Right? And two, like, they want you to quit because when you quit, they win. If they just went to like this basic vanilla offense and then the Grizzlies come back, well, then you've opened a whole can of worms that can be really hard to like package back up. I don't really know where that
you can't get those worms
you
back
can't
in
get
the can.
You can't get worms back in the can. I'm actually going to name the podcast this. You can't get worms back in the can. And so like I just this idea that the Warriors are running up the score, like, no, they're trying to demoralize the Grizzlies because that's what you need to do in the playoffs. Make the other team quit, and if they can't quit, then you have to persevere, but make them quit.
Make the other team just like crawl around on the floor trying to like grab the worms and get them back into that camp.
Right.
That's got to be the strategy.
And then go fishing.
Yes.
With those worms. No, you don't
want exactly. No, well they want the Grizzlies to go fishing after this game. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Right. So they're packaging up the worms and giving them to the Grizzlies to go fishing.
They're sure.
That's
where we got.
Right. Well, okay. If they open up the can of worms, then this hasn't been a great week for us, for you and me. So if they
great, what are you
so
talking
if
about?
They open up the worms, there's the threat that they will go fishing with them.
Exactly.
But if you keep the canned worms canned and you give them to the Grizzlies, then they have to go fishing.
Yes,
that's what it is.
The worms canned, and then hand it over,
Jesus.
And then watch the Grizzlies open the can of worms and then struggle.
I need some sleep.
Me too.
All right, before we go, just a minute.
Wait,
on this.
I want to talk about something before we go.
Yeah.
What was it like talking to Allen Iverson?
It was weird. For those who don't know, I talked to. I think it's a really good documentary on Showtime called Iverson.
It is a very good documentary.
May 16th, 9:00 Eastern on Showtime. It's about his story. That's been the goal. Is his manager Gary Moore and director Zatella Beatty? They both wanted to tell his story, and they came together and accomplished that, and they got Iverson on board. And so I got to talk to them. I talked to Zatella, I talked to Gary, and I talked to Mike Tolan. And then yesterday I got to talk to Allen Iverson about it. And it was brief. It was weird. It was like it was very delayed. I basically was waiting like over a day to talk to him. It was going to be like he could call at any time, which is
so you're just constantly.
Yeah,
you can't
I just
do
didn't,
anything.
I just didn't
worrying
like,
that he's
yeah,
going to interrupt it.
Like I just didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Once I felt like I had done the podcast on Wednesday, and once I found out after that Iverson could be calling at any time, it was like, all right, well, I'm not going to do anything until he does. Like, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to do anything. And so that's why there was no podcast yesterday, because I was waiting around for that. And but it was something where he was, I don't know, like it seemed like he was very tired. And I don't know if that's a life thing or that's just like he's been on a huge media tour. He's just gotten done with.
Probably hasn't been on a press tour.
Yeah, he had just gotten done with Doug Gottlieb's show. Which was okay. Fantastic. Which if you go to CBSSports.com, there are clips all over the website of his interview with Doug Gottlieb. It was really good. But he was, I don't know. He seemed very proud of the project.
Yeah,
and seemed very, you know, like I had gotten the quotes from people where they're like, you know, this shows kids like you can maximize your dreams, you can reach your potential, all this stuff. And he had the. You know, the thought process of like, I want this for adults too. Like, you can do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's hard work and determination, but you can do what you want. Your dream should be bigger than your reality. And that was like kind of the message he had. And it was, I don't know, it was cool talking to him. I think like I got a lot out of talking to Zatella about it. And I think that
yeah.
I'll post my Q&A with her as a separate thing tomorrow. But I wrote a long form feature. It's like, I don't know, it's a little over 3,000 words.
That's long form.
Yeah, on the
document. It's at least medium form.
Yeah, it's a extra medium form, and it's about like both the documentary, the message, and the process of getting that documentary put together. And it's, you know, he came from a he came from a crappy area with a lot of racism that's still there today. Like, they still ran it. You know, this was 93 when his incarceration happened. And 15 years later, when Zatella and her crew are trying to put together this story, like, they're still running into things where people are saying, don't go to this part of the area after dark.
Yeah.
They had their cameras taken. Like, I don't know. I think it's a pretty powerful film, and you get the buildup of why he's misunderstood. And it doesn't mean, like, I don't think it necessarily means, like, oh, he's misunderstood, everyone should love him. There are plenty of points in the documentary where he doesn't look good. You know, he's flaking out on stuff. He's going against the grain for no reason. He's being stubborn. Like, this is him. But there are also points where you see, like, the practice rant. Not actually, like, the soundbite we got out of it, not the message that should have come from that.
Yeah, the legacy of that.
Yeah, the legacy of that. And, like, you know, I've made that joke millions of times. Like, everyone does. And now I'm kind of like, you know, just watch the documentary and you get the whole message of it. But now I watch that, I'm, like, angry that that's what came out of it. And it doesn't even affect me in any way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you even have that in your piece. Like,
yeah.
It's not just that he was upset that they were talking about practice and not a game, as he said.
Yeah.
it was that...
It had nothing to do with practice. The season had ended,
and his close friend had died.
Yeah,
right?
Like, yeah. A groomsman of his, you know, they had said his best friend, Gary Moore told me, you know, his best friend brutally murdered.
Yeah.
And I think he had been murdered in January, and I think the trial had just started up when they were eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
From the playoffs. So, you know, still fresh wounds and wounds that have been reopened because of the trial and stuff. And, like, that's a lot to go. It's a lot to go through. We know that he was a guy who put his heart into every game. And so going from MVP season, making the NBA finals, winning that first game. And then after that, the next season, there were injuries. They won 43 games. They got knocked out in the first round. There are rumors he may not be around much longer. And it doesn't mean, like, you have to forgive everything about him that was bad. It just gives you a little perspective of, we made a joke out of this moment that was actually really painful.
Yeah.
And that's
totally.
And that kind of sucks, you know? It's not going to stop people from making the practice. Like, the practice joke is still...
That'll live on.
Yeah, that'll live on. And it is, like, the quote itself is kind of funny in that way, but it's kind of wrong, too.
Yeah, it's kind of wrong because he even in that press conference explained why he was upset.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Really, it's not like it was a secret, and, like, he came out and said, like, my best friend dead.
Yeah,
and, like, you know, we lost. I lost him, and
it was
we
a
lost
real
the
moment.
Series.
And
yeah,
those
it was
don't
a real
happen. In
yeah, it was a real moment, and they're like, time. And even, like, a reporter at one point says, like, oh, you're just saying practice. He's like, that's not what I'm saying. Like, he's trying to explain it to him. A PR person tries to say, all right, this is over. He's like, I'm not going anywhere. Like, let's talk about this. And I think it shows, like, so many times, and I put this in my piece, like, he wouldn't get out of his own way. And I don't think it was always because he didn't know how to. I think it was because he thought, like, there's no reason to. Like, this is, like, let's deal with the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes that was bad for him. And I think sometimes it was good.
Yeah.
I really recommend it. You know, I think the documentary was, what was it, Crossover, the trial of
Allen Iverson.
No Crossover, the trial of Allen Iverson. That handled a really good job of viewing that situation when he was a teenager. But this is
is about his life.
Yeah, this, like, is about this his is... life. There's a lot of stuff about his childhood. There's a lot of stuff about him in the NBA and the rise and fall. And it is, like... It's a roller coaster of his life. Like, his life has been a roller coaster, and I still don't think, like, I asked him, and he seemed to, you know, I asked him is there any point where you fully grasp the, you know, the impact you have on basketball culture, on culture of young people and all this. And he said, yeah, I think, like, towards the middle of my career, I kind of knew, but everyone else I asked, they're like, no, I don't think he did. Cause I don't think you could. Like, how could you understand that, like, you come from nothing, and how can you ever understand that, like, you mean everything good and bad to this billion-dollar industry.
Yeah.
It's a weird, like, that. I don't know that anyone is capable of understanding that.
Well, he changed the game. He changed basketball culture, as you said, and the impact that he had on the city of Philadelphia. Like, I remember even that moment, like when he comes back to Philly the second time,
yeah,
and he kisses the logo at center court, like
some that, chills.
I remember watching that at the time and getting chills. Like that was just awesome.
And I'm not.
And I know that didn't end.
And we're not Philly fans. Yeah, we're not Philly fans. And it's like you still get chills from that because that's a very. I think that's the thing. Like it just reminds you like he's a human. He's a human with flaws and with good things. And I don't know that he's a good person, but he's a human person, right? Like I think that's kind of the message to get out of it.
I mean, he's flawed like everybody else is, but he like I think.
Well, except for Ricky Davis.
The flawless Ricky Davis, sure.
No, but I mean, he like it reminds you like everyone's kind of the
but
same.
But I think they didn't try to in the movie. They didn't try to completely gloss over.
Yeah.
Everything negative about him, which you know, when the athlete is as involved as he is, sometimes that happens in these documentaries. But I think it was overall like, would you say it was like an overall pretty like balanced portrayal of him?
I thought so. I mean, it doesn't get into like his post career stuff. You know, like the rumors about the money and all that stuff, but it handles like the situation of, and I think it kind of leaves you to make your own conclusion about did what he say happened in the bowling alley really happen? You know, like were they not that involved in it? As the court case said, like, did he have, you know, that he has this like argument where allegedly he kicks his wife out of the house when she's like not clothed and he's brandishing a weapon when he goes to confront her and stuff. Like, did that really happen? Like, they don't really answer that question. They take his side of it. They show his side of the story, but they also show what the reports are. And I think in a lot of situations it presents like, here's what we know. Here's what people are saying. Like, you know, make up your own mind of how you want to feel about the situation.
Yeah. Was it like, as somebody who kind of, I don't know if you want to say like you grew up watching him or whatever, but
oh,
like,
I did. I definitely did.
Okay, so like, for somebody who, I mean, for me, I was like a huge Iverson kid, and like had like I wore the questions and I had the jersey and all that stuff. Like, I don't get to interview people like that all too often. Like, what was it like to actually just have him on the other end of the phone?
It was. It wasn't intimidating, but it was surreal.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird to ask a question and then hear his voice come back.
yeah, because you've heard that voice.
Yeah, because I've heard that voice so many times in so many different, like, settings of, like, I don't know, it was weird. And it's, like, I had his jersey. I wasn't a Sixers fan. I had Iverson's jersey.
Yeah,
same rookie That rookie jersey. Like, I had that. Like, when I was a kid, I guess he came in the league, I was 14. That was a moment in, like, I was always one of the taller kids in the class, and then everyone else grew, and I stopped growing, and then I had to learn how to become a guard, and he was, like, one of the guys, like, I learned how to do a crossover because I was trying to mimic him.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, that's, and it was specifically him. Like, I was trying to mimic how to be him, wearing that jersey and doing the crossover and all that stuff, and, like, learned how to dribble because of him, and learned how to, you know, do all that stuff, and maybe that explains my shot selection sometimes as I now think back about it. But like, and there's a moment.
He influenced you more than you could have ever.
Yeah. Done. There's a small moment in the documentary where he's playing for Memphis and they're in Sacramento and they just, you know, it's a brief moment with, it's not really a significant moment in the documentary, but they show that like, that was one of the first games I was ever credentialed for.
Right.
That game in Sacramento. And I wrote about it for ESPN at the time for the Daily Dime. And, you know, there's, like, little moments where, like, he was influential on my life, either directly or indirectly. And
anybody who's been around the game in the past.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, and so, yeah, to hear that voice, it was, it just didn't, it, like, it was just odd. It just, it just didn't feel real. And it wasn't, like, a starstruck thing. Like, I was.
And you talked to Vince Carter on the phone for, like, 45
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, I talked to him for, like, 35 minutes about the dunk contest. Like, that was more of a thing than, you know, than this 7 or 8 minute conversation with Allen Iverson on the phone, but it was something where, yeah, it's a, I don't know, it was a cool moment for me. Like that's, you kind of, it was frustrating getting it to happen, but then it happens. And you're like,
I think that's par for the course.
Yeah, exactly. And then, and then it happens. It's like, okay, now I got to go write. Like,
right.
I don't know if I got a chance to really, let it like soak in or anything. It was just kind of like, all right, now I got to go be a writer somehow.
Yeah, I relate to that.
I don't know. Have you had moments like that with an athlete where you're just like, it's weird to be talking to this person?
There are a few where it's somebody of that kind of magnitude. I didn't even write about it, but just this year when Magic Johnson came and did this like charity thing in Toronto, like he was at the game and did a scrum beforehand, and I was like listening to his answers to the questions. I was just kind of like, it's like him right next to Magic Johnson, like this, like when I was like 4 years old. I didn't think that would be happening, and like there's certain interviews that stand out, especially when you're talking to high profile players, like, or just in a scrum with those kind of guys that are crazy. But I don't think there have been that many, like, I haven't had like a phoner with a Iverson or a Kobe or somebody that I really grew up watching. Like, it's fun when you get to write. So, like, I wrote when Vince Carter came back to the Raptors, like, and the Raptors honored him this year, and he was crying, and he gave this awesome scrum afterward, and I asked him some questions and that, and it was fun to, like, it's fun to write about things like that, because you feel like you have the memories of when they were at their peak, and you can kind of put it in context, and that's cool stuff for me. But it doesn't, those kind of opportunities don't happen all the time.
Yeah, no, I know it's you can just think I'm just shilling or whatever, but I really
read it.
Yeah,
and then watch it.
I really, even if you don't, just click the article. You don't have to read it. But yeah, I watched the documentary. I think it's really well done, and I've watched it, I guess, 3 times now, and I like it every time. And I'll watch it again Saturday night when it's on TV, even though I've seen it already.
That's pretty high praise.
Yeah. And if you're a basketball nerd, or you just like Allen Iverson, or you just like good stories, it's, I don't know. I like it a lot.
If you like documentaries.
If you like documentaries.
Also, if you like documentaries, watch Monkey Kingdom. Disney Nature.
What?
hey, I went to see a monkey documentary.
Okay.
And it was wonderful. Yeah, Monkey Kingdom.
It's in theaters?
Yeah. Narrated by Tina Fey.
Oh, okay. I like Tina Fey.
Do you like monkeys?
I mean, I'm not against monkeys.
Do you like nature documentaries? Do you like Disney?
If they're well done, I guess, I don't know. I'm neutral on Disney.
Okay.
There's some stuff. I think I'm a little jaded against Disney because people are really angry. I've never seen Lion King.
Oh well, this is nothing like Lion King.
Okay.
You wouldn't know. You don't have the context.
Well, yeah. Then I'll watch it. If it's not about, if it's not like Lion King, then I'll watch it for sure.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'll have a movie that I recommend. I'm gonna go see Pitch Perfect 2 this weekend. So.
But you're recommending it already?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend it already.
And
Mad Max Fury Road. I'm going to see both of them this weekend.
Are you going to see them back to back?
Saturday's going to be a me day.
Which are you going to see first? Do you have this planned out? Do you have tickets
No, I don't. I should really plan that out. I think I just mostly want to talk to Dan Wyke about it.
Okay.
But now
do you have that planned out?
No. I don't know when that's going to happen.
He's busy.
I was kind of expecting the Clippers series to be over.
Yeah. I guess if you root for the Rockets, you already want to be right about the Rockets winning. So
yeah, but I also like picked the Clippers to win the championship in the preseason.
Oh yeah, you did.
So I still want that to be.
But you're gonna be wrong about something.
Well, I don't think I'm searching for things that I'm wrong about. I don't think that well's very dry. I think we're not in a drought in that situation. We've got plenty of harvesting to do. I think I'm good. I think I'm all flush on that.
Fair.
Yeah. All right, this podcast went really long, but I hope they enjoyed it.
I hope so, too.
Read our stuff and watch games and watch a documentary.
Open that can of worms.
Open that can of worms and go fishing. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Zach.